You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Wednesday, January 8th, 2020, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Kara Santa Maria.
Howdy.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
And Evan Bernstein.
Welcome to the new decade.
Yes, this is our third decade as the SGU.
Span
although we're getting
decades.
Emails even arguing about that.
Oh, we got those 10 years ago.
Oh, come on.
By the same
people. It
wouldn't
people. Be the SGU if people didn't, you know, complain about what? It's not the next decade until 2021. It's a completely unresolvable controversy.
I mean, yeah, you can make an argument either way, but colloquially, decades are like the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. It starts with the same number. So that, to me, that overrides everything.
People weren't waiting.
That's what it is.
Also, you're alive from the year 0 to 1. So that year of your life, you consider part of the first decade of your life.
Absolutely.
Well, but they go back to the fact that there was no, you know, AD 0. It's like, right? It was minus 1 BC and then 1 AD.
Eh, get with the times.
So they say since that didn't exist, then the decade ended with year 11 and that continues through. But, you know, so what?
Is that actually true? This is like my jackal experience, Bob.
Oh.
Like, I had no idea there was no year 0.
Yeah, they forgot the year 0.
Oh, jeez, that's so idiotic.
You know, if we have time to argue about things like this, we live good lives. You know what I mean? Like, we're not struggling for food and water.
You know. But we should also go back and add a year 0, because honestly, anything pre-year 0 is kind of an approximation, right?
Well, I think so as well.
If it's also off by a year, who cares?
Look, when the clock turned to the year 2000, that first second, do you think people said, oh, just 1 year to go till the new millennia, and they waited for 2001? Of course they didn't. So
that's boring.
That's it.
Whatever.
Don't forget, guys. Don't forget the concept. The entire concept of zero itself, you know, was created around that time. So it's like, you know,
kind of true,
right?
Yeah.
We just forgot to implement it, is all.
More importantly, every year we record this show, I'm sick. Every year.
'Tis the season.
I went back and listened because, you know, we're doing the predictions this year, and some of you might know, I'm not a big fan of the psychic predictions. I just don't like psychics, even if we're joking about it.
They make you uncomfortable.
But I'm like,
I smell
sick.
Like cabbage.
It's we're doing the psychic show 2019. I'm sick. I'm like, let me go back to 2018. I'm sick. I'm sick every goddamn time we do this.
It's the holidays.
Wait, you go back and listen to the recording every time?
I do, just because I want to hear what everyone... I want to hear everyone and what they say. I do write it down, but I always lose it somewhere in my hard drive.
I started writing it down on the internet, and now I can find it.
Yeah. Right, exactly. The cloud remembers all.
2020, though, what a cool sounding and looking year. I just, you know, aesthetically, it's very pleasing to me.
It's clean.
It is,
it
but
very
as
clean.
I mean, number. I know this is an ultra paranoid thing to do, but we're so used to being like 1-3. Yes, sorry, here in the US, we do our dates weird, but like 1-8-19, 1-8-18. And now that it's 1-8-20, I feel like you have to almost write 2020 because otherwise it could be 20 anything.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
it's a big thing going around too. People are saying don't sign.
Use 20 as the year. Make out the whole year 2020. Because if someone gets a hold of something, they'll turn that 20 into whatever they need to. 2017 or 2018.
Do you think
write
that's
the
like
whole year?
Undue paranoia, though.
No,
a little
are
bit.
Are people going around and like writing on? Do people still use checks?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes, they do, Kara. Yeah.
Hey, just be careful. You know, you can. Yeah. It's very easy to get hacked and get. You know, socially engineered, and you just never know when someone's going to try to take advantage. You know, like don't live your life freaking out. Just be smart. That's it. Just be smart.
Is that your philosophy?
Just be smart.
Shop smart. What's that from?
Nice, Jay.
Buyer beware.
So the idea of the psychic predictions is that we track the predictions made by psychics for the year and see how they did. They always do terribly, but they also we like to point out the strategies that they use. Basically, psychics, you know, who are, we should always say, alleged psychics, they're all fake psychics. There are no real psychics. They use a technique for promotion, right? They'll make a bunch of predictions. They're for entertainment purposes. And then they'll claim victory whenever they make a vague prediction that they could match, or they make a high probability prediction that can't be wrong, or they just make a million predictions and then they'll only tell you about the ones that they can say they got correct and not track all the ones that they got wrong. And it's kind of a win-win for them, and they use that to promote themselves, right? It's just part of the business. But it is fun to go back and see like how horribly they did. You know, if you look because they publish them. You know, you could go online and say, what did they publish in 2019? And then we also make our own predictions and then compare how we do to the psychics.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to start by each of us just going to pick on one psychic and then see how they did. Who wants to go first?
Well, all right, I'll go first.
Yeah.
So what I did was I found a panel of psychics. This was a panel from a convention in Nashville, Tennessee. Instead of it being one psychic, it's a bunch of predictions from the panel.
What's it called when a gaggle of psychics get together? Is it like a clutch of psychics?
A psycho of psychics. How about that?
Yeah. A scam of psychics.
A scam of psychics.
Yeah, there you go.
Good job, Ed.
Okay.
I like that.
So this was the 2019 Insight Prediction Panel, and here's what they had to say. A leader emerges who is exactly what he says he is, kind and cares about this country and the world. He gives people hope the way John Kennedy did, very progressive. He wins the seat he is running for. He is the northeast part of the country. A woman who is practical and down to earth emerges as a leader. She is a by-the-book person, realistic in her approach. She will be mocked and ridiculed, but she will not give up.
That's a pretty detailed prediction. especially for a psychic. They tend to go more generic than that.
I think, it sounds more specific than it actually is.
Yeah, exactly.
As usual. Here's another one. And you hear this is something that so many psychics said. President Trump will be having health issues in July.
Yeah.
They specified July?
Yes.
He went to the hospital in October, November?
Didn't I feel like President Trump has health issues every day, no?
The more vague you are, the more
exactly.
The greater your chance of success. So,
but
sure.
Predicting that an older president, you know, Trump is not young, and he's definitely not a healthy man, you know what I mean? Like, he's overweight and everything. It's really not that much of a prediction. This next one is a typical... Like, just let me just paint the canvas white and see what sticks to it. The world will continue to feel like it is speeding up, and things will continue to be a big mess for most of 2019.
Mm-hmm. That's about
thank
as
you
vague.
For that.
That's about as vague as it gets.
Yep,
stuff will keep happening in 2019.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought this next one was like, wow, really? The psychic said, the way we approach farming is going to change radically.
I wish. Weather will impact people all over the world.
And then rounding it off, you know, here's just an emotional prediction. We will begin to realize power and greed are the issues, not money. How we look at money changes.
It's also this like weird thing where they feel like they can speak for the collective consciousness of all people.
Yeah, like I am speaking from all of spirituality. We must be good to each other. You know,
yeah,
namaste.
Like,
you know what I mean? It's like, get out of here.
Money will be viewed differently. Like, by whom?
Yeah. And farming, damn it. Farming is going to change.
Farming will change.
Radically. We're going to plant things upside down. Okay?
Well, I did something a little different.
Whoa.
Uh-oh. Slow down there.
I looked at the predictions of a gentleman who claims to be a time traveler from the future.
Cool. That is awesome.
Now, if anyone knows what's going to happen in 2019, it's Mr. Time Traveler.
2019. Right?
But did he ever actually stop in 2019?
He says that he... is a time traveler from the year 2030.
Okay.
Right? And this is now a few years ago, he made predictions about 2019. Because he had apparently already
he had come back in like 15 or 16 or something.
Yeah, and
even
if he didn't.
And made his predictions? Okay.
Yeah. In 2030, he could have just Googled things that happened in 2019.
Which, if you're a time traveler, is that really a prediction? It's most like a post-diction rather than a prediction.
Well, yeah, he's not really predicting. He's just telling us, hey, this is what happened in 2019.
Now, does he go back and forth, Steve? Can he go back to the future?
Back to the future. So, I don't know. What he says is that time travel will come into existence in 2028. So in 8 years, we'll be able to time travel.
Cool.
Sure. Nice?
Okay.
Actually, that would be devastating.
So, all right, but this is what he said. This is apparently what happened in 2019.
All right.
At least
2019.
In 2019. So, of course, we encountered aliens. You guys remember when that happened, right?
Where
we finally made contact with aliens. They were
about
like
time.
reptilian aliens.
Oh, of course, the reptilian Gorns.
And they mated with humans and made a half alien, half human hybrid.
No doubt about it. DNA compatible.
It was, of course, DNA compatible. And, of course, these hybrid creatures are what united us with the aliens. So we get along now because we have children with them. So that worked out well.
It's like when the French and the British, you know, the royalties used to intermarry to keep the kind of the kingdoms from war stuff.
Right. The name of the planet the aliens come from is Lewis 33.
Well, at least that's how English-speaking people would say it.
Right. But its scientific name is 369. I have no idea what this guy's talking about.
Multiples of three? Okay.
We went to war with North Korea in 2019.
Okay.
That was a thing.
Oh, wow. I missed that.
There were some threats.
And, Kara, this is something that I think you predicted, that we could humans plug into computers, like the Matrix kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. Mine's a little more feasible, but yeah.
Based on
Common Core education was replaced by personalized education.
Really?
Augmented reality was supposed to be a big thing in 2019.
Still waiting.
It will, though.
I know, it's coming.
Once we encountered the aliens, all of the governments of the world united into one giant country.
Oh, I missed that. You know what? I was asleep that night when
that
happened.
Flag as the...
Wait, now there's aliens?
The white flag.
Wait, you missed the first thing.
And
Jake said hybrid about three times.
We moved over to one global currency. Yeah. You know, when that happened, right?
Yeah. It's called Bitcoin,
It's called the Kreplach.
Global warming will be a huge crisis in 2019.
Huge.
Humans will live on Mars.
Yep.
You guys remember when we went to Mars?
Yes,
humans
we did.
Will live on Mars. Yeah. You know what his out is? Parallel universes.
Making it all up.
Parallel universes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out. Or potentially that his time traveling itself changed things. Like, you know, global climate change.
Yeah. The aliens didn't encounter
it. It just delayed all progress, basically.
All right, so I'll go off on Psychic Nikki.
Oh, Nikki!
She had a few gems. The first one I'll say that she predicted was in the category of, like, no duh. There's going to be lots of protests worldwide. Oh, really? The U.S. government will be one of the big stories. No! Yeah, the stock market is going up and down.
No
not
way.
Sideways. Up and down. Wow. That's
Wait
wonderful.
A minute.
Of course, she's kicking herself that she didn't predict, like an impeachment. You know, I think somebody probably did because, you know, hey, you know, it seems like a reasonable thing to predict. So, but Psychic Nikki did not predict that. She totally missed the boat. And then she makes predictions like, she's chock full of these. Sylvester Stallone has to watch himself. As does Arnold Schwarzenegger. He has to watch himself for sure. And Selena Gomez. She has to watch it. I'm a little worried about her well-being. Oh, what a prediction. Wow, amazing. Then, let's see. She did, right?
It's not even a prediction.
She was kind of right on one of them, though. Let's see. You're going to hear more voices coming from outer space. Not that one. We're going to see more UFOs coming to Earth. Actually, there's some evidence for that. But the other one, I wouldn't be surprised if a spaceship landed by the end of 2019. 2020 for sure. So,
A two-year prediction.
Yeah, this year is good. Yeah, 2 years. This one will be interesting then this year.
Those are called bridge predictions.
So ABC News reported from the National UFO Reporting Center, they apparently track calls and messages from around the Americas about strange sightings. And they reported receiving 5,971 in 2019, which is up from 3,395 in 2018. Whoa, nice one there, Psychic Nikki. So she got that one right. So whatever.
Sometimes what these psychics will do also is they will put out literally 500 predictions.
Yeah, literally. Shotgunning.
And then, you know, five will hit just because of random chance. And then that's it. They'll glom onto that for future promotion saying, totally right in 2018 with these hits.
Or they'll pick up on a trend that's just starting and then they'll make that prediction for the following year. Like something's like UFO sightings are already on the upswing and then they say there'll be more UFO sightings as if they
I kind of did that for one of mine.
Yeah.
Smart. It's a good strategy.
All right, Evan, what do you got?
Yep. Our good friend, the Asperomancer, is back. Jemima Packington. She divines using asparagus.
How?
All right, man.
Oh, she takes the asparagus, you see, and she like throws it on the ground. And depending on which way things are pointing, she makes up whatever comes into her head. I mean, she divines the future through the power of asparagus. And she's been doing this for many, many, many years. Good for her. You know, at least she's different, okay? So I give her credit for that. Originality points, she's got it, as opposed to whatever, Psychic Nikki and whatever else. All right, she made 10 predictions in 2019. Let's see how she did. Fears over Brexit will prove largely unfounded. I don't think that's right. Number two, the trade war between China and the U.S. will end, but there will be a recession in the U.S. that will affect the world. That did not happen in 2019. Number three, exciting new technology will be launched. That's it. There's your that's the whole prediction.
Nice. No, there was no new technology in 2019.
So that's a total hit right there.
Well, number none four, of it excited me. So
number four, England's women's football team, that means soccer, will win the World Cup in France. Nope. United States women's team won the cup. Number five, TV's Big Brother will return to our screens. Now, that's a British popular show from way back when, and it was off in 18, but it did not come back in 19. She was wrong.
It's also
there.
A popular American show.
She was referring to the British one specifically. Gotcha. Number six, extremes of temperature become the norm. That doesn't even really make sense, does it? Extremes of temperature will become the norm?
It's like the most common psychic prediction, and it's because that was also happening in 2018.
Global temperatures are rising. Okay. fine. It's not really a prediction, but whatever. Okay. Well, we'll give her that one. Number seven, U.S. romantic musical A Star Is Born will win an Oscar. Yes, it did win an Oscar for best song, I believe, but nothing else. Number eight, household British businesses will fold. That's all she has to say about that. So
what?
That I don't even know what that means. So we'll give her a wrong on that one.
One like small business shuts down, then she
businesses,
wins.
Businesses, right. I mean, or at least two because it's businesses, right?
Minimum. Kara's like, and then she wins?
She wins the asparagus
there is
internet.
No winning.
Number nine, England's cricketers and rugby team will enjoy success. Again, totally generic. Who knows? That doesn't mean anything. That's out. And number 10, asparagus will see an all-time high in sales.
She works for the asparagus lobby.
Oh, yeah. She's big asparagus.
So, Ed, what does she do? Does she oil it up and slap people in the face with it? Like, what happens here?
Oh, I wish, because that would at least be a little more interesting. Nope, she takes it and she throws it in the air and it lands on the ground and that's it. Remember in that movie Willow? Does anyone remember the movie Willow?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
When the mystic consulted the bones and he just took a bunch of chicken bones and threw them on the ground.
That's
the same idea.
And people, you know, read tea leaves and things like that. It's just like looking at shapes, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
That's dumb. I checked out Old Moore's Almanac. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
No.
It's apparently a big deal. So it's the genuinely Irish Old Moore's Almanac. I read a little bit about its history. It was founded as a publication in 1764.
Oh, almanacs were a big deal in the 1700s. There were a lot of them.
Yeah, so it was a dude named Moore who people thought was like a diviner or something. I guess he was an astrologer. The publication was originally called the Irish Merlin. That was his nickname. And then eventually it changed its names a bunch of times. It's still being published, I think, every year in November, and they do psychic predictions. Of course, I accessed it online, and I couldn't find – there's an editor of this publication, and there's a, quote, prophet of this publication. Could not find the prophet's name. And of course, the byline on the website is admin. So here are admin's predictions for 2019. Antarctica will be in the news all year. Okay. Litecoin will spike in value. I don't know.
Is that like Bitcoin?
Care. Yeah, it's a type of cryptocurrency. This person's really into cryptocurrency. There's like a lot of cryptocurrency articles on the site.
All right.
I love this though. Retail will fail. Malls will be redesigned as food and entertainment spaces.
Just that's slowly
unilaterally.
Happening.
Slowly, sure, but just slowly. They'll fail. Like, there's still plenty of malls. It still exists.
Oh, yeah.
Some scientific discoveries about the sun and how it works will boggle our minds.
Huh.
Was your mind boggled about the sun?
We launched to the sun, so that was kind of
true.
Cool.
Well,
nothing amazingly earth-shattering like she's implying.
Nope. Sexual misconduct cases will be huge in 2019. We don't know who admin is. We'll say they. They were huge, but they were also huge in 2018.
Right.
North Korea will head for democracy. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Why would you put your nickel down on that one?
Oh, boy.
Because if it happens...
Trump controversy will continue, but he will dodge impeachments. Nope. And continue to be popular. Oprah will go into politics.
Nope.
Oh, here you go, Evan. Record colds and heats are coming.
Hey, there we go.
And heats, yeah.
It would be a slew of predictions if you didn't have something about the weather in there.
Exactly.
Or temperatures.
Global migration slows down. Nope.
I don't think so.
A nuclear accident is on the cards. What does that even mean? It's on the cards. Like it might happen?
Yes, in the cards.
That's a common prediction because nuclear accidents happen every single year. That's exactly like saying earthquakes will happen, you know, because they happen every single year. Without specifying how severe it is or anything more specific, it's meaningless.
Okay. Satellites and other cosmic items will hit the Earth. I love this guy or girl.
You mean like...
like the sky is falling. No, and don't things come down periodically?
Neutrinos?
Anyway?
Sure, all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Spain's economy will struggle. Two new planets will be discovered that could immediately support human life. Wait, what?
Yeah, but how are we going to get there? What,
exactly. I don't think that is feasible at all.
Immediately in 300,000 years.
The Canadian dollar will fall and Canadians will emigrate to Europe.
I don't know if the dollar fell, but...
Did a bunch of Canadians emigrate to Europe en masse? And finally, African migrants will head for New Zealand. Mm-hmm. These are very specific.
Yeah.
Some of them are vague, but also they're just big. I guess that's the other strategy you talk about, Steve, right? Which is like, if at least one of them hits, then everybody goes, oh my God, how did they possibly know that?
Yeah.
Well, that's true because doesn't psychic John or John of... that New York psychic, doesn't he constantly advertise that he got 9/11 correct? He successfully predicted that. And he's like been using that ever since to promote his act. So you need one big, if you get one big thing that you can claim victory on, you can use that for lots
your
of years
career.
Of promotion, of self-promotion.
You know, got to keep in mind, it's the sensationalizing of the future, right? It's the entertainment value of the things that they're saying. It's not the accuracy of the predictions. It's really selling that as a product. I am making these fun and outlandish predictions of the future. So, I mean, accuracy has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's actually pretty boring if they're all things where you're like, well, yeah, obviously that's going to happen.
Yep.
We're better predictors than they are, right, guys?
Absolutely.
Let's see how we did. Who wants to go first? So go ahead and review your predictions for last year and then make your new predictions for 2020.
All right, here I go. I think that Apple will come out with a new device that we don't need.
Did it?
Now, I mean, it depends on who you are, but to me, this happened several times. Whatever. I mean, you know what I'm getting at here. But Apple did come out with a whole bunch of products. I checked it out not too long ago. They came out with a ton of stuff. And it's all basically iterations of previous products, like the newest versions of pretty much everything.
Yeah, well, I need them all, Jay.
I know you do. You know, I'm looking at the Apple Watch. I hear people enjoy that. I might get one. I don't know.
That's not a new product 2019 specific.
That's true.
There's probably a new version of it.
New versions, though, yeah. 5G networks will start to be deployed and no one will know.
I know.
Someone knew.
They're starting to be deployed. I mean, my point with that one was basically that the rollout will be slow, and it won't be like
non-event.
We are fan. You know, there's no fanfare. Like we are now a 5G world. No, it doesn't. You know, I mean, I went to New York City and I got 5G. I saw 5G on my phone. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Oh,
really?
Cool.
Yep.
Most phones can't even do that. That's
yeah.
Cool.
Also,
yeah,
5G
ready phone. Wow.
It's like the one good thing about Jay's phone.
Yeah, he couldn't make a phone call, but he saw 5G.
Kara, I got a new phone finally.
Oh, new
good.
Phone.
Okay. That's why. Jay, I also have to say that I love that you put the qualifier on your prediction and no one will know. Because right there, with almost any prediction, if you just say, and no one will know, whether it happens or not, you can be like, nobody knows.
You're right, Kara. Don't give
so
away my
smart.
Secrets.
It's an escape hatch.
So I had a few more. A bad cyber attack will happen. It will cause a death. I was wrong. All right. Major breakthrough in artificial intelligence and machine learning. You know, we had a couple of good things happen. Nothing, no major breakthroughs. Nothing
pretty
that
generic.
Made me and Bob go, oh my God.
Yeah, from now on, write minor breakthrough.
I can't help myself. And then my favorite one from last
incremental
year.
Incremental battery.
Boston Dynamics will put a mouth on one of their robots and something bad will happen.
Whoa, I love it. Now, that's one prediction I wish had come true.
I looked. I actually searched, and they didn't put a mouth on any of them. They just have, like, that weird head thing that can open doors, but I wanted it. I so much wanted them to put a goddamn mouth on one of their robots.
On one of those big dog things that does backflips. And-
yep. All right, my 2020 predictions, guys. Now, since we had such a heavy political year, I focused my inner mind's eye on the future of politics.
Boy.
And this is what I think is going to happen. Uh-huh. The U.S. government will begin a fake news tax on social media sites.
What does that mean?
It's that they're going to tax people for publishing fake news.
That's going to get complicated in litigation.
You're right, but I love it. Mark Zuckerberg will be called in front of Congress again, and it will be revealed that he was actually lip-syncing the whole time.
Milli Vanilli, baby.
Because there's something like Uncanny Valley about that guy.
Totally. Oh, he's a Boston Dynamics robot.
I got a few more. Donald Trump will come out with a new slogan for his 2020 reelection bid. It will be called Make America 8 Again.
What does that mean?
A-T-E or E-I-G-H-T?
E-I-G-H-T.
It's a typo.
Take it for what you want.
It's a typo, but he's going with it.
I'm going with it.
A-I-G-H-T.
Make America 8 Again. Yeah.
That's funny.
China's growth will get so profound that Chinese companies will start to outsource factory work to the U.S. It's going to happen. It'll come back.
These are bold predictions, Jay.
Already sent us our trash back.
I know, right? They don't take our plastic anymore. But it's going to get to the point where they're just literally going to start like outsourcing to us because the U.S. has fallen so mightily.
All right, let's go for some serious predictions, shall we? Let's see. So I predicted that I would do far worse in 2019 than I did in 2018, and I totally killed that one.
Oh, on science or fiction?
No, just in these predictions.
Just generally? Okay.
Sorry, Bob.
Just in these predictions.
So my first prediction was that there would be evidence of new dimensions. I wanted that so bad, but no good evidence. Prediction two, mid-sized black hole discovery using LIGO. More of that, the discovery of mid-sized black holes using LIGO will lead to theories about how they're formed, because we're kind of not sure how those middleweight black holes come about. And that didn't happen. During 2019, scientists were for some reason still concerned with proving that they actually even exist. And I kind of thought LIGO kind of really showed that, but they're still kind of trying to put that final nail in the coffin to show that, yes, they totally exist. And then they'll presumably move on to solid theories about how they're created. And then the third prediction, which I really liked, there will be a supernova within 10,000 light years, which would be fantastic. There hasn't been one that close, well within our galaxy, in so long. That would have just been awesome. I mean, I need to see a sunlit sky that you could still see a supernova. It's so bright. You could see it during the day. So, not too close, though, but 10,000 light years is plenty, plenty far away. So so I totally didn't, I swung for the fences.
Swung for the fences, yeah.
And it was fun.
Bold.
Let's see. So for 2020, I predict Jay will be sick. that one's kind of guaranteed. That was my easy one. Also, 2020, we will confirm that dark energy does not exist.
Whoa.
Bob, how dare you? There's some
inkling, there's some little rumblings about that now, but it still needs to be vetted. And I will probably be talking about this in a future show, so I won't go into too much detail. Let's see. Prediction two, there will be a major deep fake political scandal. That's kind of a no-brainer. Yeah, deep fakes are going to become so much more sophisticated and prevalent as the year winds through. So I think, by towards the end of the year, I think we could see some deep fakes that are just like, whoa. And then let's see, prediction three, we will find solid evidence, indirect evidence of extraterrestrial technology in space, based on, seeing things that some technology would have needed to create. That's something that's not natural.
Like a screwdriver floating around out there that some alien ship dropped.
No, but you get the idea.
But yeah.
All right. Here were my predictions for 2019. Number one, there will be a photograph of a black hole. Hey.
No
and
way.
Look what happened. There was a
face. That was your number was one?
That was one of three, yes. Photo of a black hole. Now, all right. So, guys, there's what you. Okay. Should I reveal all my secrets when it comes to this stuff?
Well, right. I mean, you know. If you talk to a scientist that said it's going to happen.
Psychics weren't like some of the laziest people on the planet, they might know that with a little internet sleuthing, you can go ahead and see kind of what events might be scheduled to kind of be coming up in the coming year and make pretty reasonable predictions based on that. The photo of the black hole is something that's been – they've been working on it for years. Like, since like 2017, it's been a work in progress. And they kind of knew that the culmination of that would take place sometime within 2019. And if they were going to get a picture, that would be the time in which they would get a picture. And they did get the picture. The project turned out to be successful, what they had designed. But it took a few years to implement because it took a lot of telescopes from around the planet – to all get synchronized and all shoot the same black hole at, you know, as the Earth turns and one telescope loses its field, the other telescope that's starting to come around is picks up the image. And I think they needed like 8 or 12 telescopes in order to do this to get the image. And they finally got it. And yeah, we had the photo of the black hole.
Cool.
And it was big and we talked about it on the show. It was very, very cool. So I'll take that as a hit, even though it was out there to be found. All you had to do was look. As was number two, universal flu vaccine ready for testing. That was also something that was being bantered about in late 2018. And yes, that did happen. The first clinical trial of an innovative universal influenza vaccine candidate is taking place with the NIAID, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And when did that happen? Like in April? Roughly last year.
How did it go? I don't remember.
Trials.
They're still in phase one,
yep.
I think.
Yeah. Yep. They're still testing. I did not see the results of such, but the testing is occurring. And,
yeah,
you know,
they're in phase one.
They'll crack it someday. I think someday we'll be talking about that on the show, a universal flu vaccine, hopefully in the very near future. So that was number two. So that one was correct, but also I did a little, you know, research on that one. Now the third one. Did not. I did do some research, but it is an actual prediction that I made, a real one, not based on anything really all that solid. I said, thanks to years worth of underestimated demands for super high definition digital media flowing at breakneck internet speeds, 2019 will be the year where we cross the yottabyte barrier.
Woo.
A yottabyte of digital data will find its way around the Earth by the end of the year. Well, there was more data certainly out there in 2019 than any year prior. Of course, it's going up at a crazy, crazy speed, but we're not at the yottabyte yet. We got to about 40 zettabytes. You need 1,000 zettabytes to get to a yottabyte. So we got to, they estimate we got to 40 zettabytes, and they think at this pace, it's probably going to be about 2023 or so before we hit the yottabyte.
Yottabyte, baby. Yep.
How many zeros?
Well, let me put it to you like this. Here's an example. This is a good example, which put 24 zeros. Yes, it's 10 to the 24. 10 to the 24. In 2010, it was estimated that storing a yottabyte on terabyte-sized disk drives would require 1 million city block-sized data centers, and that would be as big as the states of Delaware and Rhode Island combined. By late 2016, memory density had increased to the point where a yottabyte could be stored on SD cards occupying twice the size of the Hindenburg. So in 2010, the technology was such you needed states in order to have enough physical storage for a yottabyte. 2016, you just needed two Hindenburgs.
Two big balloons.
That's an incredible thought. Then that's how far we're coming and we're making that progress. So if you think about that, by 2023, it'll continue to crunch down at this pace, and we'll be generating it and being able to store it.
You fit it in two blood cells.
Wouldn't that be cool? So those were my 2019 predictions. I was good on 2 out of 3, and again, only because I cheated on 2 of them. So now, here are my 2020 predictions.
Here we go.
All right, and I'll preface this by saying I did not do any sort of research and future research into these. Like, these are predicted to be by anyone or any technology center. These are purely psychic predictions. Here we go. Number one, an earthquake will occur during the Olympic Games in Japan, Summer Olympics. There will be limited loss of life, but damage will have an impact on the venues, canceling some events. So beware
Japan in August 2020. Number two, cybercrime of the century, as Visa, MasterCard, and or American Express will get hacked, compromising data for over 1 billion or more users worldwide.
That's a good prediction.
That's prediction number two. Prediction number three. Three major heads of state will resign in 2020. That's three country leaders, you know, prime ministers, presidents, what have you. But none of them will be Donald Trump. But three others will go. Well, they will resign for whatever reason. And those are my three predictions.
Wow, Evan.
Good.
All right. 2019 predictions. A pharmaceutical company will begin production of a universal flu vaccine to be administered in the 2019-2020 flu season. Yeah, obviously I didn't do my research like Evan did.
Evan did.
A little too soon. All right. Yeah, I'll just keep that one in my back pocket and bring it out in a few years. Okay. What else did I do? American astronauts will stop using the Russian Soyuz capsule to travel to the ISS, instead relying on SpaceX's Dragon capsule and Boeing Starliner. Okay, same, not yet. We're getting there, though. We're getting there.
Getting there.
A major data breach of an influential government agency will threaten public trust. I don't know. That probably happened somewhere.
Right. Yeah, okay. I'm going to give it to her.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, the first, and this is one that Steve referenced previously, the first brain-computer interface for individuals with amputated limbs will become commercially available.
No, I don't think yet.
I don't think that happened. But in terms of like research, we did see some good advances. We covered it a few times on the show last year, I think.
Yeah, some prosthetic news, yeah.
All right, yeah, so
incremental advances, but no commercial.
Yeah, nothing commercially available yet. But I feel like, I don't know, it may be one of those things where they're always going to be a little bit more custom. I mean, yes, I guess commercially available has a pure definition, but I don't think we're going to see these like off the shelf on Amazon ever. These are going to be things that your physician is going to prescribe
to you, right? Google Brain.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
Google Brain. All right, so 2020 psychic predictions. All right. The pound will spike and then plummet after Brexit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. A gene drive will successfully be implemented in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That hasn't
happened yet.
And when I say successfully, maybe I should put a point here. It doesn't mean the outcome will be successful.
It will successfully destroy the world.
Yeah. It just means it will happen. It will actually be implemented into the wild. And then finally, more species will go extinct than in any previous recorded years.
That's going to be sadly true.
Yep. It's kind of like the, it's going to be hotter in July.
Yeah. Prediction. Mm-hmm. Only-ish.
All right. Here are my predictions. This is for 2019. Number one, an astronomical phenomenon will be discovered that some will speculate might be related to alien technology. That happened. Yeah. It happened in January. There were scientists were talking about FRBs and how they might be alien tech.
Yep.
It's true.
All right. Good job, Steve.
Well, I guess technically.
Technically. Number two, the Trump presidency will not survive 2019.
That's wrong.
Yeah, that's wrong. He was impeached, but he did survive.
He did survive. It survived. Yeah. It's on life support, you might argue, but
I think we won't know until a few months from now.
Yeah, that was kind of a, like, all right, there's maybe a 5% chance that will happen, but if it does happen, it'll be really impressive, you know?
Gotcha.
It'll be impressive.
Any psychic would take partial credit for that because he got impeached. All right, and number three, I totally nailed, 100% correct. Atlantis will not be discovered in 2019.
Boom.
Whoa. Wow, Steve, you know, when you said that last year, I'm like, no way. You know, like, I didn't think, you know, but wow, you...
I got two out of three, and I almost got the third one. All right, for 2020, the one is kind of an obvious one, but somebody needs to say it. 2020 will be the hottest year on record.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a guarantee. You know,
that's true. The last five weren't incremental. They skipped around a bit.
2016 is the hottest year on record. So,
if the last 5 years have been like the five hottest years on record.
Yeah. So it'll all depend on whether or not 2020 is an El Nino year or not. Okay, number two. Sometime in 2020, I will be accused of being a shill simply for expressing the consensus of scientific opinion. That will definitely happen.
Okay, so, I could see that.
Does that happen every year?
Yeah, pretty much. Basically. All right, and prediction number three, a breakthrough VR game will be released that will significantly affect demand for the technology.
Yeah. Ooh. Oh, nice. Do you have an idea of kind of the genre or the...
If I had to guess, I would say it was fantasy role-playing, but... It could be sci-fi first-person shooter.
Could be a virtual sewing bee.
Could be. Those are our predictions. We'll see how we do. Well, everyone, we're going to take a quick break from our show to talk about one of our sponsors this week, Bombas Socks.
Guys, I think I have the absolute best endorsement I can give Bombas Socks, and I'm going to give it to you right now.
Okay.
I was on an airplane flying to Australia, and I made a ridiculous mistake. I was wearing a pair of socks that were supposed to be like airplane socks. I had to take them off. I had some fresh underwear and socks in my backpack because, you know, I was on the airplane for 16 hours, and I put on my Bombas socks.
Oh, because the other ones weren't comfortable?
Not only were the other ones not comfortable, I just wanted to wear the other socks because I know how comfortable they are. You know what I mean?
I love that. Yeah, I mean, I have Bombas socks for all sorts of occasions. Like you said, you can wear them on the airplane. You can wear them as like your everyday socks because they come in a bunch of styles. I really like wearing my Bombas when I work out. They're my favorite workout, hiking, running socks because they have that like super, super cushiony goodness and the arch support. And they also keep my feet dry, which is very important.
And for every pair you buy, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need.
Go to bombas.com/skeptics today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/skeptics for 20% off.
All right, guys, let's get back to the show. All right, now we're going to move to some actual science news items. First ones of the 2020 year.
Yeah.
Bob, you're going to go first and tell us about virtual humans.
So you guys are aware this week was the 2020 Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. And one of the more interesting products that was announced had to do with a new type of artificial intelligence called Neon. Let's see if the hype was justified. So this was announced by a subsidiary of the Titan Samsung. It's called Star Labs, and they are pretty much on their own. Samsung does not oversee anything, so they're kind of really on their own, which is kind of interesting. But what they described as an artificial human, claiming that it's able to converse and sympathize. And this is more, you know, digital avatar, not Android artificial human. So the new tech is supposed to create a customized digital person for displays or video games with the potential for use as what they say is TV anchors, spokespeople, movie actors, bankers, yoga instructors, or even companions and friends. Pranav Mistry is a chief executive of the lab. He's done some good work. He's a young guy. Like, I think he's only in his late 20s. Very smart guy. He said that Neons will be our friends, collaborators, and companions, continually learning, evolving, and forming memories from their interactions. See, when discussing the nuts and bolts of what's going on behind the scenes, the company describes neural networks and other AI techniques kind of woven into a proprietary technology platform called Core R3. R3 stands for reality, real time, and responsive. Okay, the idea, I guess, is that the system would be trained by exposure to how people look and behave and interact, and they claim that the result could be so lifelike that, quote, it's beyond normal perception to distinguish. Now, if you look at some of the promotional videos that were created for this, it does look 100% active, and they're moving, they're expressing. It looked impressive, but these were pre-made. The real test is when it's interactive live, and they actually did that at CES this week. So they could be trained by observing people. So the goal is to not just mimic what they record, but to, and I quote again, each Neon has his or her own unique personality, and it can show new expression, movements, and dialogues. So for example, on how this could be used, there's lots of ways that this could potentially be used, and a lot of ways we probably can't even imagine right now. But one way that they explain in a video was some video games. So a lot of video games, if you got these really important scenes within the video, like specifically, I guess, cut scenes and stuff, they do motion capture. They hire somebody, they have the motion capture rig all over their body or face, and they're emoting and talking and expressing and gesticulating, and that's what they capture for the video, and it looks very, very good, no question about it, because you have a human who's actually doing that. But there's lots of other characters in the video games that there's just so many of them that you can't motion capture all of it. And they so for those scenes, they typically will have just like an AI have the characters speak the words. And if you look at those characters, they're clearly, you know, the emotion is just not there. They're just not really nearly as alive when you're using motion capture. So the idea then would be to use these neons to create this interaction and emotion and liveliness that you won't see with typical AI-generated characters, like, say, for video games. So that's pretty much the hype. That's a pretty good overview of the hype that was coming out very recently before CES really took off. So now keep in mind, now these aren't even in the beta stage yet. This is very early technology. It's not ready for prime time at all. So that said, the demo I saw sucked pretty hard.
Oh, no. Why? What was so bad about it?
Bad.
Was it from CES?
Oh, it was a journalist interviewing one of the neon characters, just an interactive asking questions. So the answers came slowly and robotically. And, you know, that's kind of okay because they never really stressed any real artificial intelligence breakthroughs with their system. They did focus a lot on the realistic appearance and the emotional interaction of their digital avatars. That was what they were really stressing, that they would be able to convincingly express movement and emotion like you've never seen before in a completely created from scratch character. So their appearance was fine. It was very realistic. But the neon I saw interacting with a journalist was totally devoid of emotion, any movements at all. It was embarrassing. It was horrible. I can't believe they even allowed this to be demoed, because the difference, the contrast between what they were hyping and their promotional videos to what I saw was stark. I mean, the contrast was huge. And so I think this is an example, definitely overhyped based on what I saw. And sure, I think it's an interesting concept. I think it could potentially have a lot of utility in the future. You know, the plan that they want is to not just create a digital avatar. They want to have something that could learn from interactions and become better and better and better and eventually indistinguishable. And they may make some breakthroughs with this new platform they have. But, you know, based on this release, I'd be a little bit skeptical. And I really think they should have waited a year before they did this. But, you know, they want to have input. It's kind of open source, so they want to, you know, they want to get other people excited. So maybe they kind of really had to do it now. But I think they shouldn't have hyped it as much. But who knows what's going to come from it. But when I saw it, I was like, I was actually embarrassed. I actually stopped the video before it ended because I was just like, wow, this is embarrassing. I was embarrassed for the
people.
Four of
them.
I was like, are you kidding? And to hear the journalist at the end of that video, at the end of his interaction, you know, he said he was skeptical, which was good. And he said, we may see some good stuff from this company. And that's fine. But he was trying to put a positive spin on it. That was, it's like, dude, come on, call a spade a spade. This was not good. There it is. That's all I got to say about it. It was an interesting story. I had some hopes, but when I saw it just a few hours ago, I was like, woo, okay.
Well, I saw some of this too, Bob, and I mean, I hear what you're saying. You know, I don't really care. Like, it's early technology. Yeah. I like that they're working on it. I mean, maybe
me too.
They did reveal it a little early, but whatever. You know, it's cool. If they ever could roll this out into video games, or they have such a, you know, a hyper realistic character that you're going to interact with. I mean, I'm just looking at like them folding this into VR.
Sure.
You know, where you're going to be walking around and interacting with avatars that look and act human. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be great. And the fact that they don't have to, you know, record, a person and have it perfectly match, you know, whatever they recorded. The fact that they could maybe record somebody and then from there, you know, create like a deep fake, essentially, really a deep fake. That's something that you could have it say or do anything in an extremely convincing manner. That's wonderful for a lot of things, but of course the whole deep fake angle is a little scary as well. But and it's necessarily tied to that. But still, I mean, we're going to see a lot of this. Clearly, we're going to see a lot of this in the future in lots of different venues, and it's just going to get better and better and better. It's just like, you know, who's going to come out with it first and who's going to do it best, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it progresses through this decade.
I mean, you know, this is kind of a non-news item because the concept isn't new and we're not really any farther along than we thought we were, you know? like,
yeah, what makes it a news item is that basically they're like, we're far along, look.
Yeah, they overhyped it.
And that's my biggest complaint. You know, fine, you're working on it, you're developing it, and you've made some progress, and you've got an interesting concept. Great, don't overhype it at CES, because that just left a sour taste in my mouth.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wasted Bob's time.
All right, Kara.
Yes.
Tell us about genetically modified trees. Is that going to be a thing in the future?
Yeah, so there's this really cool study between German and U.S. scientists that was done over the course of, like, I think 3 years, where these researchers decided that they wanted to genetically modify hybrid poplar trees. Yes, it's a hybrid.
It's funny how often that word comes up.
Right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and I was reading the Wikipedia for the specific type of poplar that they used in this, and they say hybrid like 50 times, and I was like laughing every time. And it's actually written, did you guys know this, that when you look at the scientific name, you know, like the genus species in Latin, so genus is capitalized, species is lowercase, when it's a hybrid, there's an X in between the two?
No.
So this is it's Populus X. I don't even know the right way to say the notation. I don't know if it's Populus cross canescens or Populus X or hybridized canescence. So it's across the gray poplar, as it's commonly known, is a cross between Populus alba, which is white poplar, and Populus tremula, which is the common aspen. Huh. Okay. So that's the tree that these researchers used, because apparently plantations of hybrid poplars, specifically these gray poplars, are used for all sorts of different things, for manufacturing, for, you know, making snowboards, for making drums and electric guitars and all sorts of stuff. But it's also used to produce energy and fuel.
It's a good wood for burning.
Yeah, wood for burning to help with the energy. So it's like a complicated thing, but they grow on these short rotation systems. They can yield all this wood, and then they can burn that wood. And then also, for fuel, for the same purposes. The problem is, when they grow these plantations of quick-growing poplar, not necessarily the burning, but just the living, the production of the poplar itself, there are a lot of emissions. And so I know it's kind of a weird thing to think of the word emissions, but emissions literally just means something is emitted by the tree. It's not considered pollution per se, but there's something called isoprene that these trees produce. And I was reading up a little bit more on isoprene. And so don't come at me with your emails, chemists, or maybe do if I get something really wrong here. But I'm trying to keep it short and simple. Isoprene emission actually affects aerosols. And when we think about aerosols, I'm talking about like haze, like misty water droplets. The aerosol formation, it seems to be a function of the isoprene that's given off by these trees mixing with the nitric oxides or nitric oxides that are produced by industrial activities. And so when those two things come together, you see this haze that actually forms ozone in the troposphere. Now, the troposphere is the lower atmosphere, so it's different than the ozone layer. That's actually in the stratosphere. But it is it's a huge air pollutant, probably one of the biggest in some places. So even though the industrial activity is putting off the nitric oxide is a big part of the problem, the isoprenes don't help. So these researchers were like, well, let's see. What happens if we basically genetically modify these trees to just produce less isoprene? The problem that they were worried about is that isoprene seems to be a product that's produced to help these trees deal with spikes in temperature, like climatic stress. And so they were like, if we produce these trees to not produce this isoprene, are they going to be in danger whenever there's like a high level of temperature in them? And what they found was no, they were able to produce these trees. The trees put out less isoprene. And they seem to be just fine. They maintained their productivity. They did not have any sort of ill effects. They weren't like less efficient in photosynthesizing or in producing the actual wood, the biomass. They were able to make fuel no problem. And they actually planted these plantations both in Arizona and Oregon. So they figured, let's put some in a hot area and some in a colder area and see if the production is different once we minimize their capability to make isoprene. And they produce just the same in both areas. So they think that it's because there are other compensatory compounds that the tree is producing that are maybe less pollutant, less pollutive. I don't know if that's a word. Than isoprene.
I like it.
pollutive, sure. That polluting, that are kind of polluting. Yeah, less polluting. Yeah, I think you're right. That put off fewer pollutants than isoprene, and so that may be a way that the plants are kind of overcoming this genetic modification. They also think that most of the production in the trees actually happens before the heat sets in, like earlier in the growing season. So that might be a protective mechanism as well. But it's really cool. Like the data seem to show that this is going to be a useful strain of this organism that could go into industrial purposes if they can get it. I don't even know if it would be as hard. What do you think in terms of regulatory purposes to get this passed? Because we're not worried about consumption. And that seems to be where the sticking point is for a lot of people who don't really fully understand the science. I don't know if doing it as an industrial product, people might be kind of less weird about genetically modifying an industrial product. And all they did is they used this RNA interference technique, which the authors describe it as kind of like vaccinating the tree. I mean, I know that's like a really simple way to put it, but they use RNA to actually transmit a protein that tells it to suppress this target, which is the production of isoprene. And then the tree doesn't produce the isoprene. And it seems to work. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I mean, it just shows you how blurry the lines are with what is considered a GMO. Because again, they're not adding anything. They're just silencing a gene, basically.
Yeah, and it really, like, when you compare this to public perception of GMO, there are shades, like you said. It's a nuance. So some people are like, oh, turning off or turning on a gene is fine, so long as you're not putting in a gene from a different organism. And then other people are like, no, doing anything in the lab isn't okay. You should only be crossing them naturally, whatever the hell that means. Yeah, and so it's kind of all over the place. Like, we sometimes like to say that genetic modification is any agricultural organism. Like, they've all been genetically modified through crossbreeding over the years. But I think the kind of quote unquote legal definition, or at least the most accepted definition by researchers, usually involves transgenics, right? It involves actually somehow transferring genes. And so, yeah, it's sort of in the middle. It's a wiggly area, but maybe because of that, it'll be easier to get this moving. And the reason that this is actually a big deal, which I kind of forgot to mention at the beginning, is that the biomass production of poplar trees is like massive. Like, when you add it all up, it's the size of Hungary.
Really?
Yeah.
9.4 million hectares.
Yeah.
It's a massive crop. So, yeah, if it's going to be putting off a bunch of ozone, basically, we should be trying to, you know, any place where we can cut down on emissions. It also produces, I mean, isoprene in and of itself is a greenhouse gas, and it tends to be competitive at the level of methane. Like, the amount of isoprene that's put off is about the same as the amount of methane. And that's a big deal. Like, we're pretty worried about methane, right? So this would be a good place to be able to cut down on those emissions.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Kara. Jay, get us up to date on these Australian bushfires.
Oof. Awful.
What the hell, man?
Yeah, you know, we were there, and, you know, we were talking to a bunch of our friends that live in Australia about the fires and the smoke, and it really was very depressing talking to them and seeing, you know, we're going back a month now, and, you know, the fires are still going, you know, imagine that.
Now summer is raging down there, and it's just, it's getting worse.
Yeah, and the fires are so bad that 2,000 kilometers away, New Zealand is considered to be significantly impacted by just the smoke.
Yeah.
You know, not even the fires. When we were in New Zealand, we were driving up a mountain, and there was snow on the mountain, and the snow was kind of like grayish brown. And the driver told us, you know, hey, do you see that? That's because the smoke has collected in the snow, you know, the snow, the ash, water and the snow.
The fine particles.
Wasn't there like a recent kind of news article that they were able to look at satellite footage and they saw that some of the physical smoke is actually reaching South America?
Yeah,
it's horrible.
Yeah, you should go online if you haven't yet and really take a look at the images. We have satellite images and they have, you know, overlays where they can show you, you know, where the fires are burning, how far the smoke is moving. It's really astounding. It's like, you know, part of our planet is on fire, guys. It's bad. So 15 million acres are over 6 million hectares. This is over 7 times worse than the California fires in 2018. And that was a massive fire.
Oh, gosh, that's what Paradise, California was burnt to the ground, the whole town.
Consumed.
you know, if you look at a map of where the fires have been and where they currently are, it's really shocking to see, you know, just how much ground it's already covered. I mean, the east coast of Australia is completely dotted with fire locations. And when they, you know, when they show you like a dot on these maps, that's the size of the fire. You know, like that's the size of the area that's been burned or is currently burning. Like, it's a massive amount of acreage.
Yeah, but just to clarify, though, I don't know if you're going to bring this up, Jay. A lot of the maps that are circulating are cumulative, meaning that they're showing where the fire has been over the last month. That's not everything that's burning right now.
Oh, yeah. It's past burned or currently burning. Yeah, it's not like, you know, the whole country is not on fire, but it's definitely covered more land area than, you know, when you look at it, you're like, really? Like, is that even possible? Yeah, unfortunately it is. And what we're seeing is that, you know, we have the perfect conditions here for the fires to continue. It's been very hot. It's been very, very dry. And add to that, it's been windy. And when you add wind to that equation, you know, you have like this unbelievable, well-oiled machine of spreading fire. And it's you know, and you need all of these conditions in order for a fire to be this big and burn this long and hit that much acreage. And the conditions are not getting better. You know, last year, Australia experienced the hottest and driest conditions ever recorded. And as the climate warms, Australia is reaching temperatures that increase, you know, the evaporation and worsen the existing drought. Some areas of Australia have been forecasted to have less rainfall due to global temperature rising. You know, in December 18th of 2019, so, you know, just, you know, a month ago, Australia experienced its hottest day on record. And guess what? The day before that was the previous hottest day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Think about that. It reached over 107 degrees Fahrenheit or 42 degrees Celsius. That's hot. And they were saying that these conditions are like early in the warming. You know, like we're going to see a lot hotter than 107 degrees in Australia. Now, there are several factors that can contribute to these fire-friendly conditions. And what we have is you have in the Indian Ocean, we have a dipole has been particularly strong recently. With that. Now, what a dipole is, this means that during a normal life of the temperature of seawater, it oscillates between, you know, warm and cold or hot and cold, depending on what temperature you want to call what. But the ocean temperature changes. When the hot phase is hotter than normal, which it has been, that means that the colder waters are farther to the east. And because that colder water is pushed away from the warm water, it pushes the rainy weather away from Australia. So this normal dipole situation that we have going on in the Indian Ocean that affects Australia's weather so tremendously has been just, you know, the heat has literally been turned up on it, and it's changing the way that the weather moves and where we're finding rain. So a second unusual pattern that's also emerged is that the Antarctic stratosphere that has resulted in clearer skies over Australia. So we have this different pattern of weather going on up there as well. And this has also created a strong westerly wind that brings dry air to Victoria and New South Wales. So, you know, we're seeing like the ocean temperatures change. We're seeing weather up in the stratosphere change, or, you know, just what's happening up in the stratosphere. You know, instead of the wind moving in a circle around the Antarctic, it's just not moving in the same ways as it did even a decade ago. The good news is that the monsoon season is supposed to be coming, and basically that means rain, and it's going to end the fires. For now, we have to wait it out. There isn't any real predictions going on that I've read, and I've read a ton, but everything is just very loose. It's going to get worse, guys. It's going to get worse. We're going to see fires in places that, you know, right now when you think, oh yeah, fires, California and, you know, Australia, it seems to make sense. You know, hot, dry, not incredible amounts of rain. But we're going to start having fires in places that people are going to be very shocked. So to all of my friends in Australia, I emailed a few people that are living in Sydney and telling them that, you know, you can come here if you need a place to live, like whatever, like I'll do anything to help them. But I'm legitimately concerned. I mean, the health effects of smoke are very bad. It's just very, very bad to live in a smoky environment nonstop.
Yeah, if you have asthma, it's like it could be deadly. Mm.
Yeah.
Now, again, we always point out you can't attribute any one specific event to global warming, but you have to look at the big picture, at the frequency and the extremeness of the events that are happening. And statistically, this is a change. Well, everyone, we're going to take a little break from our show to talk about one of our sponsors this week, The Great Courses Plus.
Guys, you need to listen to the Great Courses Plus because you can learn about things that you are interested in. You can learn about things that you probably should know about and you don't.
It's true. The Great Courses Plus is this really amazing streaming service where you can look up virtually any topic, and there are these courses that are taught by renowned professors. Now, you can either watch them or you can consume using the audio version, kind of like a podcast, and you can do it from any device anywhere. So it's super convenient, and it's a way to really learn something new without, you know, formally going back to school.
This week, we're going to talk about the theory of everything, the quest to explain all reality. Not a small task, you might say. Now, you don't have to completely understand physics. I certainly don't. But you could still appreciate the theories. They're beautiful. And this course peels back the many different layers that these theories have. And the greatest ones, like Einstein's theory of relativity, the Big Bang, and more. There's so many fascinating theories that you could learn about.
So sign up for the Great Courses Plus today and get a free trial of unlimited access to the entire library at thegreatcoursesplus.com/skeptics.
All right, guys, let's get back to the show. All right, guys, I'm going to do a quick neuroscience thing. This is kind of cool. You guys ever heard the term engram?
Yeah.
Yes, the E-N-G-R-A-M. Mm-hmm.
Didn't I hear that on Star Trek?
What do you guys think of when you hear the term engram?
I think of Scientology, and I think of, it's bullshit.
I think of Star Trek.
So neither of those is correct.
Okay, well, I'm, that's why we're skeptics.
So the term engram was actually first coined about a century ago, over a century ago, by a neuroscientist called Richard Semin, who introduced the term engram. And he thought that was the fundamental unit of memory in the brain. Right?
Oh, that's cool.
Oh. Yeah.
So quick overview. You know, our understanding of how memory works, you know, has been evolving for a couple thousand years. Actually, the Greek philosophers thought that memories and cognition may have something to do with the brain. But throughout the ancient times and medieval times, it was pretty much taken for granted that cognition was a function of the soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there was basically dualism was the order of the day. And that the soul interfaced with the physical universe, you know, in some way, and that they started figuring out pretty early that was happening through the brain. Although at the time of Galen, you guys remember Galen, right?
Yes,
there's a medieval physician.
Yep.
The debate was between the cardiocentric view and the encephalocentric view. So essentially, is our memories, heart or the brain? And Galen and others at the time thought that. Oh, well, the brain does the things like memory and thinking, but the heart is where we have like emotions and feelings. And what's interesting is that you know, think about it, that notion that the heart is related to feelings still exists today.
It sure does. Oh, yeah, it's in our culture too.
By the early 19th century, late 18th century, there was the debate about whether or not the brain was compartmentalized or one big mishmash. And
mishmash.
If you remember, it was actually the
plum pudding
phrenologists, you know, who were saying that no, it's compartmentalized. Different parts of the brains do different things, and they were right about that, although they were wrong about everything else. And so by the early 20th century, that was kind of where we were. Is that we was like, okay, the brain is where all the stuff is happening in terms of thinking and everything. Different parts of the brain do different things, and so if the brain is where memory are stored, well, what is a biological fundamental unit of memory? And that's where Semin came in and said, okay, there's probably some pattern of brain cells that is a specific memory. And he called that an engram. He tried to find where that was in the brain, but of course we didn't have the technology back then. And the idea scientifically was in limbo for 100 years because you couldn't really prove it right or wrong. It just wasn't really getting us anywhere because we didn't have the technology to really address it. But in the last 10 years, last 12 years, researchers finally really have the tools needed to start doing research that is, you know, addressing the question of like, are engrams real, right? Is there this actual unit of memory? And so scientists recently published a review of basically the last 12 years of research saying, okay, what experiments have we been done and what do we know? The paper is Memory Engrams, Recalling the Past and Imagining the Future, by Dr. Sheena Jocelyn and Susuma Tonigawa. So in one study, they ablated, which is basically killed, a subset of neurons in the lateral amygdala. So these are neurons that are allocated to a putative engram. So they would essentially allow you to access, right, that memory. So when those cells were killed in mice, they lost the ability, they lost that memory, right? So that was a way of destroying the memory by just ablating cells in the lateral amygdala. They did a second study where they were able to stimulate a different set of cells in the hippocampus, and this was able to activate a memory, a previous learned experience, right? So they were able to essentially destroy a memory in one experiment, and they were able to activate a memory in another experiment. But I think the more interesting one is the hypothesis was, well, if you know, there's this collection, this network of neurons, and that network is the memory, but you need to be able to access it somehow, and you could sort of externally stimulate it to activate the memory. Is it possible that there are silent engrams in the brain, meaning that there's a pattern of neurons that exists enough that it is still encoding the memory, but it just can't be activated by other networks, right? So the idea is that, like, when you think of when you recall a memory, that engram is being activated by overlapping engrams that are being activated by other things, right? So it's this constant, endless loop of memories activating other memories, right? Which kind of feels right. I think that's kind of, you know, how we experience things. So what if there are silent engrams that are old memories that have faded and that you just cannot access because you can't stimulate them? But what if we externally stimulate them? Could we resurrect silent engrams?
Well, doesn't that sometimes happen in neurosurgery?
Yeah, forgotten memories. That's sounds like it's the same thing.
It's cool.
So they were able to do that, though. They were able to activate silent engrams artificially that could not be naturally activated.
Cool.
Here's the other thing. They were also able to artificially implant memories in mice.
Wow. Now, what were the memories?
You know, like learn. It's always things like learning how to run a maze, you know, things like that. So it seems like it's still early days, right? This has really just been like the last 12 years that we've been resurrecting this notion of engrams and then doing studies specifically designed to say, all right, does this way of understanding memory on a biological fundamental level make sense? And so far, the studies are consistent with that. I mean, it's a long way away from proving that this is actually how the brain works, but it does seem consistent with everything we know, both from psychology and now from neuroscience. So I thought it was interesting for a couple of reasons. You know, that term was stolen by Scientology, and now scientists are taking it back. But also that a scientific idea could be essentially correct, or at least be useful, but sit in limbo for 100 years, you know, until we develop the technology to really study it, you know. But that, you would think, this idea has been sitting around for 100 years and it's never been proven, that would be an argument against it. But it really is. That's not necessarily the case. If the reason that it hasn't been demonstrated is because we really don't have the technology to test something, or we haven't been able to look, you know, where we need to look for whatever reason, that's not the same thing as evidence that a theory is incorrect, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's better to consider it as being like in limbo. I consider like a lot of theoretical physics that way, you know, like string theory and whatnot, that these are interesting ideas, but they're kind of in limbo, though, until we figure out how to test them in a way that could potentially falsify them.
And I see that a lot with cognitive psychology as it is, because cogpsych is this weird field that's sort of like halfway between neuroscience and pure psychology. So it's trying to figure out how the mind works, basically. And what we know about neuroscience is often implemented into it, but a lot of cognitive psychologists have these theories of like, you know, you've got this schema, and then you're like, you're going to select. They use all these words that are like not neuroscience words in order to describe almost like metaphorically what's happening in your mind, because we don't know yet at that level how these things work. And so it's like a good way to approximate how a lot of things are working when we, quote, think.
A construct, right?
It's totally a construct.
This is a neuroanatomical construct.
Mm-hmm. And up until we have something neuroanatomical, we often use metaphor to describe what's happening, because it makes the most sense to us.
And we just don't know if this engrams is a metaphor or if we're really onto something fundamental. It's like it's early on, it's like, okay, there's some encouraging studies here, but it's going to take decades. I predict decades before we like really get a handle on whether or not this is, we're describing something real in the brain, you know?
Yes, but speaking of engrams, remember I said it reminded me of Star Trek? Well, of course it did. The Ultimate Computer with Richard Daystrom, played by the awesome William Marshall. He said that he imprinted human engrams onto the M5 circuits, which of course were his engrams. So yes, I was right.
Oh yes, oh, Bob. Hello. Oh my God, you're right.
Hello.
I remember that.
So engrams were a proven thing?
Yes.
Evan, tell us, do you have puffins joined to the world of tool-using critters?
Well,
what,
yes.
Those creatures from Star Trek, The Last Jedi? I mean, Star Wars, The Last Jedi?
Porgs? No.
Oh, puffins, they, porgs.
They use, do you know a baby puffin is called a puffling?
Awesome.
How cute is that? But regarding tools, well, yes, if you believe this paper that was published the last week of December, it showed up in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, right, Kara?
Yes.
Pinas. Pinas. They presented video footage taken by a camera trap of an itchy puffin who was making a burbling sound and scratching its chest with a sharp end of a twig. This is the first on-camera evidence of this behavior in puffins. Okay, so this was not suspected but not known, certainly not captured or proven before. But now they have two cases in which there has been documented evidence of puffins doing this. One puffin was examined in Wales in England, and the other in Iceland, which is about 1,700 kilometers away from each other. So you've got puffins in one part of the North Atlantic and puffins on the other part of the North Atlantic, and they're both exhibiting the same behavior. So that is pretty darn cool. They say the importance of these observations is threefold. First, so far there had only been a single form of body care-related tool use recorded in wild birds, which is known as anting. I don't know if we've talked about that, Steve, on the show before. Have you heard of anting by birds?
No. So
apparently birds will find an ant nest or a place where there's several ants, and they'll get the ants to crawl on them. And it's a skin conditioning or a feather conditioning procedure that they go through. They think perhaps the ants consume parasites, and then they take, you know, so they're using the ants as a tool to keep their feathers clean and their skin clean. So that's fascinating. I had not known that before. Hmm. So here's now the second case in which they're showing a wild avian using a tool for something very specific. Now, you know, they talked about, well, how do you know that? Okay, so the puffin, which is an amazing bird, by the way, Steve. I don't know if you've ever seen one.
No.
You've seen pictures of them, but right,
yes,
you haven't checked one off in your bird book.
Nope.
Yeah, I have to go more northerly.
Think a hybrid of penguin and parrot. Nice big orange parrot beak.
And their beaks fluoresce. Did
yes,
you know that?
Yes, they do. And they change color depending on the seasons as well.
Neat.
So yeah, they're a little more dormant in the winter, but in the spring and the summer they go full color, full orange color. So it's very cool. So they'll pick up the stick and they'll use it to reach a part of their, you know, body down in near their belly where their beak otherwise can't reach. Now they're using these sticks for that purpose, and then they're putting the stick down and they're not using it for any other purpose. Whereas you see the puffin collecting things with its beak, like straw or feathers or other things that are softer, and they'll take those materials and bring them back to their nests to line their nests. But they won't do that with the sticks, apparently. So they'll just pick it up, use it, and drop it where it is, and that's where the stick hangs around. So that indicates tool use, that it's not that it's not for some other related purpose, that they just happen to be, say, lining their nest or creating a nest with a twig and they decide to scratch themselves on the way to doing it. It seems they specifically picked it up in their beak for this specific purpose. So that's neat. And then they also said, secondly, the breadth of tool used to include another group of birds, seabirds. So this is the first seabird that has been seen using tools. So that's cool. And they said the third significant fact is the distance, 1,700 kilometers apart, suggesting occasional tool use may be widespread among the group, and that physical cognition may have been underestimated previously.
Neat.
So that is cool stuff. Now, crows, I think we've talked about it on the show before. Crows have used hooked sticks to catch grubs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So the fact that, you know, the birds are using the tools, well, this is, you know, another example of that. This adds to the evidence that.
So there are 10 animals considered tool users other than humans, including crows, and mm-hmm. now puffins, I think, are 11. But there's also chimpanzees, of course, orangutans, and gorillas. So the big primates, not a surprise. But also elephants, dolphins, sea otters,
yeah,
octopuses.
Oh, I wonder what the hell.
Octopus, macaques.
Macaque.
And some rodents.
Neat.
All right, Jay, hey, it's been a long time since we've had a Who's That Noisy.
All right, guys, last week I played this noisy. What do you think of that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but it needs a tune-up.
Yeah. It does sound like something that needs a tune-up.
It sounds like a roller coaster.
Wow.
Oh,
unbelievable that you say that, like, because that. Carolyn Burns also agrees. She said, "Hi, guys. This week's noisy sounds very much like an old-fashioned wooden roller coaster climbing a hill."
Mm-hmm.
She says that she remembers her and her sister being traumatized by the Yankee Cannonball at Kenobi Lake Park because it rattled so much she thought it was going to fall apart.
We still have an operational wooden roller coaster here in Connecticut at Lake Compounds.
That's right.
I rode it a few years ago.
It's a fast and furious wooden roller coaster.
It is.
And there's a couple of times during that ride where you're like, I'm going to get killed.
Yeah.
Like wooden roller coasters.
Yeah.
Yes. So Carolyn Burns represents about 100 people who wrote in saying that it was a roller coaster.
It does sound like one.
And, you know, look, as I say with Who's That Noisy, it's remarkable how many things sound like other things. And really, context is pretty much everything. Another guess, X-A-N. How do you spell it? Is it Zan? I always forget. Zan von Ackerman?
Yeah, because usually short for Xander.
Yeah, that's a cool name.
Yeah.
He says, "Greetings, skeptics. Lots of clunking, some humming and such. I'm guessing this is a winch of someone for something like an anchor on a ship or raising a bridge. As a side note, I agree that you are indeed a bastard of the tricky variety." Okay. Well, thank you, Zan. I am a tricky bastard. No, this is not a winch raising a bridge or an anchor to a ship, but I would love to hear those noises, and I bet you they sound exactly like a roller coaster going uphill.
It's a winch-like sound.
And I almost gave up. I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to go through all these emails because they're all exactly the same. And then, like, Hans Golden. God, I love this man. Because he figured it out. "Hi, Jay. This sounds like a windmilling jet engine, and that's what it is." He said, "I love you guys. My girlfriend and me always listen to the show together as soon as it comes out. Best regards from Amsterdam, Hans von Golden." This guy was like a ray of sunshine in a sea of Who's That Noisy wrong guesses. Thank you, Hans. So this was sent in by a listener named Craig Jacus, and this noise is, this was from the person who sent it in, this is the sound of wind blowing through a cold jet engine. The engine is wind milling. The clacking noise is the loose fitting from turbine blades rattling around the engine center shaft. The blades, when cold, are designed to have a lot of play when cold. That's the way he wrote it. Where they mount onto the engine center shaft. As the engine starts, the centrifugal force throws the blades out, and they can self-center and self-balance. The shaft and blades also heat up rapidly, expand, and it locks them into place. Very cool. Never even heard of it. Wind milling. If I heard any plane that I got into do any of this before I knew what it was, I would have been very, very upset and probably walking off of that plane. I have a new noisy for you guys, though.
All right.
Prove it. Yep.
All right. So this noisy was sent in by a listener named Michael Schmidt. And before I play the noisy, I want to tell people that I endeavor in 2020 to warn you if a noisy is going to be screechy or irritating in any way. Mm-hmm. If I forget or I don't agree that this particular noisy needs a warning, I'm very sorry. But I will try to give people a heads up next time, because sometimes people say, hey, it would have been nice if you said something like, hey, watch out, this noisy is about to screw you out of your driver's seat. You know what I mean? Like, so I got to remember that people are driving and doing all sorts of different stuff.
Screwdriver. Yeah. Got it.
So anyway, this next noisy is not a bad noise. It's a really cool noisy. And my only hint, which won't help much, but that this noisy goes on for minutes. I'm only going to play about 30 seconds of it, but it keeps doing the same thing that it's doing here, which is basically a varying degree of the same theme. Ready? And here it is.
Wow.
Isn't that cool? It just keeps going.
Minutes,
what's
huh?
What's happening?
Yeah. It's a pretty cool noisy. I'm really excited to tell you guys about it when we get there. That was sent in, again, by Michael Schmidt. And it's really cool. I think you'll like it. I think it's a good way to start off the year. Now, another good way to start your year off, I'm sure you all agree, is that the SGU has some seriously cool events coming up. We do a show called the Skeptical Extravaganza. This show is a stage show. It's an improv show. It's a show where we teach you or show you, we demonstrate to you how bad your perception of reality is, to the point where we are going to, you will not believe the things that we pull off in front of you. Okay? That's what I'm going to put that flag in the sand right here. By the end of the show, you're going to sit there and your mind will be blown about what we do in front of you and how we have completely fooled your mind into believing other things. Now, Evan, is it true that the last show, that it was so good that even you, your mind got blown?
Totally blown, and I'm still looking for pieces of it okay. to this moment.
I think if you haven't seen the show, you should come out and check it out because it's a lot of fun. If you have seen it, we have significantly updated it and enhanced it and brought it to a level that it deserved. This show is a ton of fun to do. It's hosted by George Robb. It's a comedy improv science experiment, and it is definitely something that you're going to see because it's coming to a city near you.
Yeah, so we got Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, January 31st, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, February 1st, and Brooklyn, New York on February 2nd. Yes, we are aware that that's the Super Bowl, but here's the thing. The Pats are not in it, so who cares?
Nor are any New York teams.
Yeah, that's right. So forget about it. And we are to enhance the Philadelphia experience. Of course, you could come to this if you're in any of these events. You could make the trip to Philadelphia. We're going to do a private show. And Jay, give us the details.
What this is we do a live recording of the SGU in front of a live audience. We do take questions. It's not uncommon. And these shows are typically a little bit more fun and a little bit more loose, especially for the live audience. You know, we do edit it pretty significantly to put it on air, but you are going to see a version of us that you haven't seen and hear us say lots of things that you haven't heard before. They're a ton of fun. They're very personal.
Yeah.
George has been known very often to make people cry during these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best.
In a good way.
Yeah, and George, of course, will be with us at this particular private show because we're going on the tour to do the extravaganza, so he will be joining us. Now, if you want to get the tickets for this show, you could go to skepticsguide.eventbrite.com, and you will see that private show there. And also, you can keep checking there because more private shows will be coming up. We're going to be doing a private show in Seattle, which I will be...
So that's the new event added to our calendar. February 15th, Saturday, February 15th, at 2 p.m., we're doing a private show. We'll give you the details on that when we confirm the schedule there. And 7 p.m., there'll be an extravaganza in Seattle. Those tickets are not yet available. They will be very soon. As soon as they are, we'll put it up on our website and we'll announce it on the show. We'll spread it out through the social media universe. So that's the next extravaganza, Seattle, Washington, February 15th. Which is a Saturday evening, and we'll be doing a private show that same day somewhere in Seattle. All right, guys, let's go on with science or fiction.
It's time for science or fiction.
Each week I come up with three science news items or facts, two real and one fake. And I challenge my panelist skeptic to tell me which one is the fake. So this is the first science fiction we're recording in 2020, although last week's show, which was in 2020, and we'll count on 2020 statistics, was the L.A. private show. And we all swept Bob on that one. So we're all at 100% except Bob.
Oh, no.
Who has no science. So this is your Bob's first, but the rest of us have one under our belt already. Item number one, researchers have successfully developed a universal flu vaccine, which when tested in mice, protected against six different influenza strains. Interesting that you guys both, two of you, predicted this, but it actually happened. Item number two, a new study finds that injuries from e-scooters have a higher rate of head injuries than from bicycles. And item number three, the first ever FRB, fast radio burst, located within the Milky Way galaxy has been confirmed. So, Kara, I want you to go first.
Well, we know that researchers have successfully developed a universal flu vaccine because it's in phase one clinical trial, but we don't know if it's the same one you're talking about that when tested in mice protect against six different influenza strains. I mean, the whole point of it being universal is that it protects against most of the flu strains, right? But I guess you have
yeah. So name. Just to clarify what I'm saying there, that's the six. They basically picked six ones across the spectrum, okay. And it did to all the ones tested, which was six. So it's still universal, but you know they didn't test every single strain.
Gotcha. And then a new study finds that injuries from e-scooters have a higher rate of head injuries than from bicycles. That's rough. When you say a higher rate, you mean like the percentage. Like you're talking about compared, because not an absolute number. You're talking about the compare. Okay, good. Because I still
it's percentage.
Think
as much yes,
yeah, ride them as ride bicycles.
Yeah, exactly. So of those people who were injured, like if you take all the people who were injured on e-scooters, a higher percentage of them have head injuries than the percentage of people who were injured with bicycles.
I mean, I'll tell you that from my experience living in LA, because e-scooters are everywhere in LA. They're all over the place. I never see people wearing helmets. I don't know if I've ever seen a single person wear a helmet when they're on an e-scooter. Because I think the point of e-scooters is that they are like convenient. They're just randomly throughout the city and somebody goes, I don't want to walk. I'll just jump on that. So they don't have a helmet on them because it's not their main means of transportation. So that one actually wouldn't surprise me because I think a fair amount of bicycle riders like are hip to the fact that they need to wear a helmet. And, you know, they just strap it to their bicycle when it's not being ridden. And the first ever fast radio burst located within the Milky Way galaxy has been confirmed. Well, I guess this is hard. I would think that that one has to be the fiction by default, unless there's something about the universal flu vaccine one that maybe they must have tested it in animals before it became, before they started testing it in people. But six versus 60? I don't know what you could have changed in that one to make it the fiction. So I guess I'll say the FRB is the fiction.
Okay, Jay.
The one about the injuries from e-scooters. Yeah, absolutely. The study finds that injuries from e-scooters are have a higher rate of head injuries than from bicycles. I mean, I've ridden e-scooters quite a bit. I haven't taken a header yet. I've seen people take headers on them. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the tricky part about this one, Kara, since you answered, I'm going to kind of talk to you about it. The tricky part about this one is your body is in a different position when you're on an e-scooter than on a bike. You know, you're kind of sitting or standing in a different orientation. I'm questioning the head injury thing. It might have something to do with the people riding the e-scooters on sidewalks, and there's more stuff in the way. But I could see how this might not be be true as well, but I'm leaning towards that one being science. The first ever FRB located within the Milky Way galaxy has been confirmed. Yeah, I think this one is science as well. So we're going to look at this first one here. The researchers that they successfully developed the universal flu vaccine. Yeah, I don't get it because I agree with Kara that I thought that this was in pre-trials right now as well. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm gonna say that the one about the e-scooters is fiction just because it was the only one that seemed like there was a wrinkle in there.
Okay, Evan?
Of these three, I think the one that I'm most familiar with is the fast radio burst. I know I've covered them a few times on the show. Increasing frequency of detection, finding better methods of detecting them and also looking for the repeaters. Some of them apparently do repeat, and these things are just fascinating. And maybe one day, I wasn't bold enough to make a psychic prediction about FRBs this year, but maybe in the coming years, I'll do that. We'll figure out what the heck they are. But the problem here is within the Milky Way galaxy being confirmed. My understanding is that these FRBs emanate from very far distances away, millions, if not billions of light years. And they put out a tremendous, tremendous amount of energy all at once. I think I reported once that an FRB can have as pack as much energy as the sun, our sun produces in 100 years. So if you had something of that magnitude happening in the Milky Way galaxy, I mean, I don't know that that would have just kind of slipped by either the news cycle, or I think it would be a much more significant event than just kind of me first learning about it here in science or fiction. So for that reason, I'm going to say that that one is the fiction.
Okay, and Bob.
Okay, so first one, universal flu vaccine. Yeah, what everyone's saying makes a lot of sense. That sounds totally... totally right. I mean, we all agree that there the study's happening, but I don't think any of us really know, except for Steve, what the results are. So it just makes sense that it was, you know, that it's doing very well. I totally buy into that. The e-scooters, okay, I've got a lot of good points made here as well. We used e-scooters in New Zealand. It was they are a blast. They are a total blast. So much fun, but Care is right. Nobody's bringing damn helmets for that stuff, and they are precarious. You're driving that thing at a good speed, like Jay said, on sidewalks, lots of obstacles, scary stuff. I also did bike riding, and it was actually an e-bike, so it gave you assistance, and that was much less dangerous feeling, even with the boost, than the scooters. Scooters, man, there were many times where I'm like, holy crap, I almost killed myself. I was just happy we survived. It was so much fun, but damn, man, because you know you're going fast. So I'm buying that too. And then the radio burst. Yeah, Evan made a really good point. These are so crazy powerful. We would have heard about it. It would have been bright, at least in radio waves. So I don't think that's up. I'm gonna call bullshit on that one. That's fiction.
Let's go to number one then, since you all agree on that one. Researchers have successfully developed a universal flu vaccine, which was, when tested in mice, protected against 6 different influenza strains. You all think that one is science, and that one is science.
Yay!
Cool. Yay! Yep.
This is We're a totally nail new one. This is a soon. New one, not different from all the previous ones.
Oh, cool.
Yep, this is using nanoparticles.
Nanoparticulates. <Yep.
laughs> Against the protein 2 ectodomain and the neuraminidase. So these are parts of the flu vaccine, of the flu virus, that evolve very slowly. And so they're pretty much the same among all the various strains. And so if you could target that, both of those, with the same vaccine, it should cover pretty much any flu. Which, of course, is a huge advantage. But the big problem with the flu vaccine is, as you say, Jay, we cover 3, maybe 4, if you get the quadrivalent, different strains in the flu. But there's dozens or 60 more, whatever, plus strains out there. And they're evolving all the time. And so we're always playing catch-up. You know, we're always trying to treat the one that we think is going around. But by the time we get the vaccine out there, it may have changed a bit. And so, you know, the efficacy is decreased because of the match is not always great. But imagine if you can get one flu vaccine and then you're covered for 10 years against every possible flu strain, you know.
We need it.
Yeah, so maybe a few more years to get the clinical approval, but you know these vaccines are coming. All right, let's go to number 2. A new study finds that injuries from e-scooters have a higher rate of head injuries than from bicycles. Jay, you think this one is the fiction because of the nature of e-scooters. Everyone else thinks this one is science, and this one is science. Sorry,
yeah.
Jay. Couple studies have come out recently showing that the number of injuries due to e-scooters is spiking big time the last few years with their use. And we've all experienced these. The percentage grew between 2014 and 2018 by 222%. more than 39,000 injuries with 300 and The number of hospital admissions increased by 365% to nearly 3,300.
Ouch.
Of these injuries, the rate of head injury is actually greater than for bicycle riders. And Carrie, you're right. Nobody is wearing a helmet when they're riding a scooter. The actual research shows between 2 and 5% of people wear helmets.
Not
that
good.
Much.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, 2 to 5%. That's mostly nobody. I did, though, in one location where we were at, the e-scooters had helmets attached to them.
Yeah, sweet. Strapped on.
I didn't see that.
I saw them.
And, of course, helmets would be an extremely effective way to reduce these head injuries. So I think that wouldn't surprise me if we're going to start seeing some helmet laws for e-scooters. Yeah.
Sure.
As these injuries start to spike. Makes sense. All right. That means that the first ever FRB, fast radio burst, located within the Milky Way galaxy has been confirmed, is complete and total bollocks, because Bob and Evan are correct. These things are massively powerful. What the research that I found showed was that the second confirmed repeating FRB's location was pinpointed.
Ooh.
Pinpointed, and it comes from a galaxy 500 million light years away.
Yeah, these things are pretty far away.
They're pretty far.
But how powerful.
Far? Real, like, really far, like uber far.
Jamie far.
So that was the fiction. I don't think that's going to happen. We don't really know what they are. It's not like they can't be in our galaxy, I guess. We don't know. We can't really say that until we know what they actually are.
They're getting better at detecting them, though, so.
Yeah, they're detecting more and more and more,
we'll,
absolutely.
We'll crack it someday soon, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. All right, so everyone's at 100% except Jay, who was at 50%.
No, I'm with Jay.
I'm at a zero.
I'm with Jay. We're tied.
You're one for one. You didn't miss. You didn't lose one. You gave the science or fiction.
Yeah, you were zero for zero before.
Oh, the
this.
One I gave. I thought it was the one that I. No. Okay, I gotcha. Gotcha. No. Oh, I feel better.
How does Jay feel? Ask Jay how he's feeling.
I'm all right. I'm fine.
It's early days. Early days. All right, Evan, give us a quote.
All right. This quote, first quote of the new score, was suggested by listener Louis Goldberg. Thank you, Louis. I like this one because it's from our friend Douglas Adams, who once said, "I'd take the awe of understanding over the awe of ignorance any day." Hell yeah.
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 That's a good quote.
Sentiment confirmed.
Very straightforward, but yeah, absolutely.
DNA.
That's right.
That were his initials, DNA.
Yeah, cool.
Douglas Nucleic Adams.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining me for the first SGU episode of the decade that we're recording this decade anyway.
Woo.
Yeah, darn right.
Yeah. And until next week, just 1 week to our next show. Until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information, visit us at theskepticsguide.org. Send your questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. And if you would like to support the show and all the work that we do, go to patreon.com/skepticsguide and consider becoming a patron and becoming part of the SGU community. Our listeners and supporters are what make SGU possible.